Good morning, everyone. We're going to go ahead and call the Senate Judiciary Committee to order. Thank you very much for being here. Today, we'll be taking testimony on Senate Bill 1551. We have the Attorney General here, as well as Representative Nathanson. I know both of you are on, let's say, tasks that need to have you give your testimony. So I'm going to ask if you two want to come up together, and Cheryl, you can join them if you like. And I don't know if you want to flip coins to see who goes first, but we'll let you decide. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Nancy Nathanson, State Representative from House District 13. But I'm here today to speak to you as an Oregonian, not as a legislator. Just 2 weeks ago, I received a very curious letter from the Social Security Administration. It asked me to sign a form to release medical information to them. This was very curious. Instead of ignoring it, like some people may have done, I had no clue, no idea why I should get this sort of a piece of paper. It didn't make sense to me. But instead of ignoring it, I suspected fraudulent activity. I took it in person to my local Social Security office. The representative came out with a file that apparently had already been compiled and asked me a series of questions, and then confirmed my suspicion. Someone had filed an online claim to initiate my retirement and my disability benefits and have them deposited directly. By the way, I understand that much of the time these direct deposits are made to a debit card. Huh. That's really nifty. This person used multiple data points to make this online filing. They had my name, date of birth, Social Security number, my mother's name, my home address, and more. It feels awful, and it feels creepy. Thank goodness I live in a neighborhood that has locked mailboxes. I have filed a police report. I have filed an identity theft report with the Federal Trade Commission. I have followed instructions left on the FTC website and the advice and instructions from my local police department. And I have initiated a credit alert or freeze with three credit rating agencies. I think we have stopped this in time to prevent public money from being fraudulently claimed. But now, with all these data points about me, allowing someone to pose as me, what's next? And if there's a financial impact on me, legal fees, investigators, or theft, who's going to make it right? And who will be accountable for releasing all of that public information that was private, now making it available, potentially even publicly, but at least for fraudulent activity? Who released all that information that makes all this possible? Please take steps to protect Oregonians. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for the representative? Thank you very much for giving your testimony. Attorney General.
Thank you, Chair Pozanski, Vice Chair Thatcher, members of the committee. My name is Ellen Rosenblum. I'm the Oregon Attorney General. Thank you for considering my testimony on a critical piece of legislation, Senate Bill 1551. And I also want to personally thank Representative Nathanson for sharing her personal story. And I'm so sorry that happened. And I'm very concerned about all the other Oregonians to whom something similar could be happening that we just simply don't even know right at the moment or could happen any time down the road. As you may know, my office took the lead in responding to last year's massive Equifax data breach. This breach was remarkable, not just for its size, but for the unusually sensitive quality of the information stolen, including financial data, driver's licenses, social security numbers, virtually everything an aspiring hacker needs to build a convincing profile of your identity. If the statistics are to be believed, more than a few people in this room had their personal information compromised by this breach. Within hours of learning of the breach, we issued a consumer scam alert. Since the alert was issued in mid-September, more than 50,000 people have visited our webpage to learn more, and that is primarily Oregonians. People were at a loss to understand the magnitude of this breach, and we were able to quickly and succinctly explain to them how to best protect themselves by freezing their accounts, obtaining fraud alerts, and not signing up for expensive long-term protection by the very company that was the target of the breach. Unfortunately, even our recommendation to freeze their accounts came with a price tag, and I'm happy to see that this bill addresses freezes in particular. In an age where our data is increasingly digitized, breaches have come to be expected and, to perhaps an unfortunate degree, accepted. To protect Oregonians, I recommend the passage of Senate Bill 1551, and here are a few reasons why. A recent IBM study found that 71% of businesses said their organizations were not prepared for a cyber attack. In 1 year, email fraud grew 2,370% from 15 to 16, according to the FBI. And in 2016 alone, victims of ransomware paid over $1 billion. And as you also may know, my office has joined with 41 other state attorneys general to hold Equifax accountable for its massive data breach and resulting consequences for consumers. At the same time, the Federal Consumer Finance Protection Bureau has taken no action on this issue, leaving enforcement to the states. We are only as protected as our law is robust. And thanks to the very hard work of this body, Oregon does indeed have a robust data protection law. Of course, the collection, use, and guarding of data must evolve even as hackers develop newer strategies to access our most personal information despite our best efforts. In the weeks following the revelation of the Equifax breach, Chair Pozanski contacted my office and requested our participation in a work group designed to develop needed policy responses to the vulnerabilities exposed by the Equifax breach. We were happy to answer that call, and the efforts of that conversation now come to you, expressed as Senate Bill 1551, as modified by, I believe we're at -2 amendments at this time. So here are the primary aspects of the bill. First, credit freezes. Under Oregon law, asking a credit reporting agency like Equifax, and there are three major credit reporting agencies, to freeze your credit report, which is a change in status that prevents any new accounts from being opened in your name, costs $10 per agency. It's another $10 to unfreeze, defrost the account. Multiply that times every credit agency and every family member, and even the most basic steps in protecting your identity following a data breach start to look pretty expensive. Senate Bill 1551, modified by the -2 amendments, will require companies like Equifax to freeze and thaw your credit upon request, free of charge. This is immensely important because freezing your credit is recognized by many credit advocates as the best, if not the only way, to really safeguard yourself against the work of fraudsters attempting to open new accounts in your name using stolen information. Removing the fee for this service will incentivize Oregonians to do the thing that we know to be probably the best thing, to maintain a freeze on their credit whenever it isn't being used without worrying about the price tag. Second, Equifax did not tell consumers about the data breach for months after it was known by the company. This essentially gave a head start to fraudsters who could use information while consumers had no idea that they had been breached. Senate Bill 1551 would require companies to report a breach in the most expeditious manner possible, not to exceed 45 days. So that is the addition to the current law, which does require an expeditious manner of reporting. Third, this bill creates some bright lines to help consumers after a breach get the help they need without being sold a lot of what they don't need. Consumers in this situation already feel taken advantage of. Their most personal information has just been compromised, and they're not always sure whom to trust. A breached company usually through a third party, offers free credit monitoring. But often when the consumer calls or goes online to sign up, they're steered toward a pay-per-month credit monitoring service or other types of paid services. Consumers are then bewildered to find out in a month or two that the free service is not free. And they're now getting hit with a monthly charge that they may not recognize or have any idea how to stop, how to turn it off. So we hope that Senate Bill 1551 requires a clear separation be made between any free services offered as a result of the breach and any other attempts at offering paid-for services. Finally, we provided some technical updates to the section of the law that lists what, in broad strokes, constitutes reasonable security. This is indeed a technical modification, but an essential one. Our data breach statutes require companies to make reasonable efforts at maintaining their data, and that's a standard that will inevitably change over time as data protection mechanisms become more sophisticated in response to new technologies and new threats. The continual refinement of these definitions may not be as splashy as the limiting of consumer fees, but it's just as important to the enforcement work done by my office. In today's hyper-connected world, the next big data breach is not just a matter of if, but when. Data will continue to evolve, and we must evolve with it. The Equifax breach has sadly served to remind us, but probably importantly, that this work is not done. I am thankful to you, Senator Przanski, and your work group for bringing forward this important legislation during the short session, and I urge the passage of Senate Bill 1551.
All right, thank you. Cheryl, I'm assuming you are here as a lifeline today, or you have additional?
Chair Przanski, members of the committee, my name is Cheryl Heemster. I'm the Deputy Legislative Director at the Oregon Department of Justice. Yes, mostly as a lifeline, if I could add one point in anticipation of what might be coming behind me. There seems to be some confusion over one line in the bill that says, changes the definition a little bit. The line is, or possesses or has access to personal information as a result of a transaction with a consumer. We just want to make sure that when a company kind of farms out their security, that it stays in place that both the company and the security agency both have a duty to keep that information secure. By farming it out, you don't just get out of your responsibility. What we're not intending to say is both of those companies then need to give a notice in wake of a breach. One notice is sufficient. We don't need multiple notices for the same breach. So just wanted to get that on the record and happy to work that out if there's any ambiguity.
All right, thank you. Questions for either?
Well, I guess I would know. I would not like to be directed to the line she's referring to.
Okay.
Chair Przanski, Senator Thatcher, it is on the dash two amendments, page 5, section 2, lines 13 through 16.
Thank you.
I believe so. Thank you, Chair.
Any other questions? Ladies, thank you very much.
Thank you. Right,
have a great day.
You too.
All right, so how do we want to do this? I'm not sure if we need to go behind or do you want to go through.
Okay.
All right, I guess for our next panel, we'll bring up Charlie Fisher, Pam Levitt, and Hal Scoggins.
Good morning.
Good morning.
He's going to go first.
All right. Chair Przanski, members of the committee, my name is Charlie Fisher. I'm the director of OSPIRG, Oregon State Public Interest Research Group. We're a statewide consumer advocacy organization. And I haven't had the chance to look at the dash twos too much in detail yet, but I guess broadly, we're here mostly in support of Senate Bill 1551 with the dash one amendments is what I was planning on talking about. But I guess broadly, the Equifax breach is really what brings us here. It affected about 1.7 million Oregonians and 143 million Americans nationwide. And it really just brings to brings clear the fact that a credit freeze is the best thing that consumers can do to protect themselves from identity theft as a result of this breach. And therefore, it's very important that because these consumers never gave credit bureaus the permission to buy and sell their data. They shouldn't have to pay in order to protect themselves. There are two comments I want to make about what I was able to see in the Dash 2 so far. First of all, I think it's moving in the right direction in terms of free credit freezes. It makes it very clear that all of them are free without any restrictions. However, I think the provision around upselling has actually taken a step backwards from the Dash 1. The principle here is a company like Equifax shouldn't be able to profit through selling credit monitoring services off of their own negligence. And the way that I read it, Equifax could conceivably, you know, the only reason you go there in the first place is to get the credit monitoring services that are necessary because they lost your information, and they can then attempt to upsell you for paid services that you don't need. And there's no telling what they're going to say in order to try to convince a consumer who is obviously at this point somewhat scared that they need to take every step possible to prevent identity theft, to convince them to pay money to pay for a needless service. So what we would like to see is a prohibition on upselling or offering any free credit monitoring service in conjunction with someone coming to a credit bureau in relation to a data breach, so that they can't use the fact that they got this person's information, their email address, solely because they came as a result of the company's own negligence, and then attempt to sell them additional products. So that's kind of the principle of what we'd like to see. But overall, we're really supportive of the concept and especially happy to see that credit freezes are free. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Chair Przanski, members of the committee, my name is Pam Levitt, and I represent the Northwest Credit Union Association. The Northwest Credit Union Association represents 59 state and federally chartered credit unions in Oregon with 2 million Oregonians as members, and we are not-for-profit financial cooperatives organized to meet the needs of our members. I just want to say thank you to the chair for all his work on this issue. Senate Bill 1551 is the result of a lot of discussion out of a work group that we participated in. Our comments originally were on the Dash 1 amendment, and we're quickly reading the Dash 2 amendment, and we'll certainly be supporting a final product. I provided you some written testimony that really talks a little bit more about what we're seeing at Oregon's credit unions in the area of data breach. I just want to make a couple points. Although most consumers have probably only heard about a few breaches, hundreds of security breaches occur every day, exposing millions of data records. Consumers will be protected from those fraudulent charges on their cards due to the breach, and the cost is generally picked up by the financial institution. The Northwest Credit Union Association supports state and federal legislation that addresses the significant and growing problems associated with data security breaches. And we work hard to protect the confidentiality and personal information of all of our members. We have supported language in bills in the event of a breach that would notify financial institutions by those who caused the breach. With opposition to that proposal, we also supported language in the Dash 1 amendment that would change that notification to a merchant card processor. In the Dash 2 amendment, that language is pulled out, and we've agreed to continue discussions. Our basic interest is when a breach happens, the first phone call is not to Home Depot or to Target, it's to your financial institutions. And our credit unions are working very hard to help our members clean up what's going on with their personal information. And so our interest is on notification to financial institutions. We're happy and willing to talk with all interested parties into achieving that goal, and we're certainly willing to continue discussions in 2019 to get language that works for all of us. We're certainly willing to come to the table. We don't want to pass legislation that's not going to work. Our request has been to adopt provisions that will more quickly get information into the hands to the parties best equipped to prevent fraudulent cards transactions, and that's the issuing financial institution, which bears the brunt of the losses. We look forward to continuing discussions, and my colleague House Scoggins, who's the outside counsel for credit unions, has a few additional comments. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Hal, thank you for being here. China and I noted that this is an opportunity to actually see the face behind the
voice.
Yes, yes. I've been on all these calls. So, Council's now in with us.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Thank you, Chair Prozanski, members of the committee. My name is Hal Scoggins. I'm an attorney with Farley Wada Witt in Portland, and we are the outside counsel for the Northwest Credit Union Association, as well as many of the credit unions that serve Oregonians throughout the state. And I do appreciate the indulgence of allowing me to participate in the meetings by phone, and they have been very productive, and we appreciate the hard work that has been put in by all parties on this. And it's difficult because there are some thorny issues. There's no question about it. As Pam said, the goal of credit unions in this process has really focused on card breaches, debit and credit card data breaches, which result in some different harms and different allocations of those harms than, say, other types of breaches that are more broad and maybe result in identity theft for consumers. But usually with card data breaches, due to the allocations of liability that Congress has set up in the Electronic Funds Transfer Act and in the Truth in Lending Act, Congress has said that when there's a card breach and there are fraudulent card transactions, the issuing financial institution bears the losses for those transactions. And that's simply a cost of doing business, according to Congress, for the financial institutions that issue those cards. That is why, as Pam noted, our focus here has been to get information about a card data breach into the hands of the party that can do the most about it and is also in the position to bear the loss primarily when those card breaches happen, and that is the issuing financial institution. Because, of course, when a credit union receives notice of a breach, it can make the decision to block that card, issue a new card, and get that card out into the hands of its member so that fraudulent transactions are either minimized or eliminated. There are some hurdles to that, of course. Notice, no matter who provides it, costs money and takes time. And different parties in these transactions have access to different pieces of information. There's information about the breach itself. There is information about the consumers who are involved in the breach, and merchants may have some of that information, but not all of that information. And then there's information about the issuer. And again, there's the question of who has access and how best to get the notice where it needs to go. And there are hurdles there. Our issues in some of the language that's been discussed and that came out in the Dash 1 amendments is what standards are there for who's going to provide notice? In other words, what is it that would trigger your requirement to give notice? And of course, financial institutions don't want to be in a position of having to provide notice based on standards that are vague or unclear, and certainly in situations where we don't necessarily have access to the information that would trigger the notice requirement. The other issue is, of course, who gets a report of the data breach? And our concern is that credit unions should get that notice as the issuers, because we're the party that is primarily in the position to stop it. The merchants aren't really in a position to stop it. The payment networks aren't in a position to stop it, and it's really us that needs that information. The main issue that we've dealt with is an issue of timing. There is currently a process in place where the payment networks get notice from a merchant, and by payment networks I mean primarily Visa and MasterCard. There's also Discover, of course, but they get notice from the merchants that there's been a breach. That notice doesn't come back to financial institutions currently sometimes until months after the breach has occurred. And of course, months is a whole lot of time for fraudulent transactions to develop, and it takes time for us to again find out about that and block those cards. If we have timely notice of the breach, then that's something that we can address and block the cards and prevent that transaction. So we appreciate the work that's been done. I would agree with the comments of Osberg on this, that the Dash 2 amendments move forward in some ways and move backwards in other ways, and we're committed to continuing the process of working through this issue and coming to a result that ideally will be beneficial for everybody involved. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Pam.
Chair Prozanski, Pam Levitt, I forgot to mention, with our agreement to continue our discussions, we strongly support the 45-day notification piece in the bill.
All right, thank you. Questions for anyone on the panel? Not seeing any. Thank you all very much. What? Cliff, I'm sorry, Senator Vance.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For those of us new to the conversation, a few general questions would be helpful. This appears to be a nationwide, worldwide issue. And you mentioned standards. So am I to understand that whatever is being done in this bill is built upon these national standards, or what? In other words, is this bill a individual, I think the word I've heard is sui generis, attempt to tack additional things onto a national standard? Is it picking up pieces of standards and moving them around, or what? How would you describe what it is this bill does in relationship to existing standards of data protection?
Chair Przanski, Senator Benz, I would say there are multiple layers to the answer to this question. The national standards that I spoke of in terms of Regulation Z, the Truth in Lending Act, Regulation E, the Electronic Funds Transfer Act, those relate primarily to liability and don't have anything to do with notice. There are national notice standards that have been issued under the Gramm-Leach-Bliley Act that apply to financial institutions and other parties with sensitive personal information, but those notice standards are fairly narrow in scope and in terms of who is required to be notified. A financial institution, certainly when it has a data breach, is required to notify its our members who are involved in that breach. But that's when our own information is breached, and it may or may not involve card information. There are standards that are issued by the payment networks, Visa, MasterCard, et cetera, that require merchants to notify them when there's been a breach. But there are no real standards that they hold themselves to for when the payment networks notify the issuing financial institutions. There are state notice requirements for various types of data breaches that apply to various different parties, and they are, you know, there are some similarities, but they are in fact different in every state. So this is something that builds upon the existing framework in Oregon and would add new requirements and new protections. I don't know if that adequately answers your question.
We're going to do some follow-up for sure. I'm also going to bring another panel up to talk more about notice, to go in more greater detail.
Go ahead. So the question is, in the brief conversations I had about the bill, is whether or not these are sufficiently consistent with these additional protections that are built into this bill, are consistent with the type of systems already in place across the United States. And to get to this point, I would normally ask an outside peer review group or whatever national group is available for this purpose to answer that question. So, but I have you. So the question is, what outside look has been provided at what we're trying to do here? And are we comfortable with this this activity in the context of international and United States existing standards?
Chair Przanski, Senator Benz, realizing that you have me and not the person that you actually wanted up here, I will say from my perspective, and I have 26 years of experience representing credit unions in these types of matters, and we've certainly had input from our members. We understand how the payment systems work. We understand the laws and the regulations that are in place. So I'll make at least that representation. I think the short answer to your question is yes, we believe it is fully consistent with the existing standards. It takes things a step further in terms of notification requirements, at least in terms of the data breach provisions. Of course, there are other provisions in the bill as well, but we believe that what's in this bill is consistent, or what we hope to get out of this bill is consistent with current regulatory and payment system standards, and also, frankly, operational practices and data system standards as well. In other words, it's doable and it's not inconsistent with anything else that's out there, if that's the question that you're asking.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Yeah, so the it's been suggested that your answer would be consistent with bank technology issues and data issues. But what appears has happened is that the approach used for those types of transactions, banks, have been picked up and applied to all data in Oregon, thus creating an awkward situation for those who collect data but are not banks. Would you agree with that?
Chair Przanski, Senator Benz, I would say it is important, as I mentioned early in my testimony, to distinguish between card data breaches and other types of data breaches. And I think that has been one of the struggles with the language in the bill. It's one of the things that's being worked through, even from the dash one to the dash two. And there may be some further work to do on that. I don't think there's any question about that. But again, I don't think it's something that's impossible. I do think it is important to recognize the distinction between card data breaches and other types of breaches, and both the operation of how to address those breaches, the results of those breaches, and who's impacted by those breaches is all different. And there's no question we do need to take account of that.
Thank you.
Senator Lithicum.
Pam, specifically in your written testimony, you refer to problems with the unfair trade practices, and that is a whole slew of issues. Can you encapsulate that for us?
Chair Przanski and Senator Lithicum, that language in the testimony was in reference to the Dash 1 amendment, and it is now out in the Dash 2 amendment.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Any other questions for the panel? All right. I'm going to ask y'all to step back. Thank you very much. We're going to go ahead and call up Cheryl. Once you come back up, Teresa, I understand, and Aaron, I think the three of you may have a little bit more detail on the notification. Thank you for being here, and for Cheryl, for you staying here.
Chair Przanski, members of the committee, again for the record, Cheryl Heemstra, Department of Justice. I believe you want me to address the notice piece. So what we're doing with notice is changing the standard from most expeditious manner possible to 45 days maximum. And with the Gramm-Leach, the banking piece, there's kind of two different pieces with the banking piece in the bill. The first is the notice provision that the credit unions had proposed, going from from retailers to financial institutions. That part has come out in the Dash 2s. There may be other questions regarding the Gramm-Leach-Bliley language, if I understand you correctly.
So let me just, for clarification for the record, Vice Chair Thatcher was suggesting that we focus on Dash 2s. That's, I think, the position where we're at. The Dash 1s are no longer really in play. We're at the Dash 2s, understanding we're probably going to end up having some other additional amendments based on the continued work that's going on.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
That's great.
I think it'd be helpful if I could discuss this section 2.
Why don't you go ahead and put it out there?
All right. Cheryl, thank you. And Teresa, if you could please give us an overview and explanation in Section 2 of the Dash 2 Amendments, Subsection 9C involving the Gramm-Leach-Bliley Act and the provisions there, and then also the further provisions on page 10 with HIPAA. If folks could walk through that, I think that would be appreciated.
I was going to say, Chair Przanski, if I can defer to Aaron Tieberbaugh, who is my subject matter expert in this particular bill. We appreciate it.
Chair Przanski, member of the committee, my name is Aaron Tieberbaugh. I'm a policy analyst for the Division of Financial Regulation. If I can peek at her thing for a little bit, I haven't had much of a chance to look at the Dash 2s.
Aaron, could you bring that microphone down just a little bit? I want to make sure you're covered. There
better.
You go. Thanks.
But if I'm remembering correctly, the notification and the amendments had said that if the they're compliant with the Gramm-Leach-Bliley Act, and so long as those standards are more stringent to or equal than you would be compliant with the Act. The Gramm-Leach-Bliley Act doesn't specifically set out a time limit for notifying, but it does set out affiliated parties and who you can release customer information to or protect protected information to. There are exceptions for cases where it's likely that there's going to be fraud is being perpetrated. So there may be a bit of a wiggle room with regard to the 45-day notice and who it is that's going to be notified. It looked like in the Dash 2s that there wasn't provisions for the merchant service providers or the merchants anymore, and so that would take out the unaffiliated parties and that you're not allowed to share personal information with unaffiliated parties. That would kind of remove that level of maybe conflict with GLIBA. It might not be a conflict if there is because of the provision with regard to in cases of fraud or to prevent against fraud. And then with regard to the timing of notification, it really says you've got to notify consumers in the most, you know, as quickly as possible. It does provide for time limits for an investigation and to make sure that there has been an actual breach that's going to affect consumers rather than just there may have been a breach, but we don't really know what had happened. They're also required to notify law enforcement expeditiously, and there's provisions that says if law enforcement says we want you to hold off on this because it might jeopardize an investigation, which is very similar to the notification provisions in, I think, all of the versions of it, then there's a kind of a that 45-day gets expanded if law enforcement requests it. Is that responsive to your question? With regard to GLIBA anyway?
All right. Any questions based on the information we've just taken in on notification?
No, but I may have to go back and re-listen to it in slow motion.
Chair Brzezinski, I may offer. Actually, for the record, Teresa Van Winkle, Department of Consumer and Business Services. Vice Chair Thatcher, if it would be helpful for you, we can provide to the committee a primer on currently what's happening with the federal regulation. I should also point out, too, that if there needs to be further clarification for compliance for financial institutions that are subject to to GLBA, we can clarify that along with other federal regulation via rule.
Mr. Chair.
Yes,
go ahead. That would be incredibly helpful.
Yes, we will get that to take care of right away.
Our lifelines will be with us. All right. Is there any other questions or comments? Ladies, thank you very much. All right. The only other person I have currently scheduled on the witness list is Betsy Earls. I know we have a couple people on the phone. And is Sarah, were you going to give testimony? You're not. You're just observing. Okay. So let's see. So the two that we have for
just one right now.
Just one. And is that in conjunction with Betsy or standalone?
Standalone.
Okay. Betsy, why don't you go ahead and give us your testimony?
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, Betsy Earls, representing Oregon Business Industry Association and the Oregon Retail Council. We just got these amendments right before you did, the Dash 2s, and I've been parsing through them. I think they look like a great start. We probably have some more work to do, but we really appreciate the changes that have been made so far. Let me just give you a brief rundown on where we see the issue in general. We, as a group of retailers, as the Oregon Retail Council, do agree that safeguarding data is very, very important, both for consumers and the business community. But at least the way the bill was written prior to the Dash 2s, we were very concerned that it failed to substantively improve any customer protections, in spite of some of the new requirements that we felt were probably overly burdensome and not, I guess, to use a cliche, we weren't getting enough bang for the buck out of those. It looks like the Dash 2s are a great start on making the bill workable for everybody, but I would point out that last time we modified Oregon's data breach laws, I believe the process took more than a year. And I want to point out but right now what we're trying to do is make some of those modifications in a short series of work group meetings and a 5-week legislative session. So to the extent that we are working with retailer notification, merchant notification to financial institutions and the way that should look, we would like to back up, take more time between now and the 2019 session about how that should look, and I think just get some more information about what financial institutions actually need, whether that properly comes from retailers or whether that might be better served, their needs might be better served by their own implementing of a chip and PIN standard for their own cards, which is more likely to provide them with more security than any retailer notification would ever give them. And is something that is entirely within their discretion. As to the standards that Senator Bentz mentioned earlier, I believe he's referring to the payment card industry standards around how data is secured and some of the other requirements for notice. And payment card industry standards, you might know, are a nationwide, worldwide group of standards that are written into almost every contract with a card network that a merchant has. So they're fairly robust standards. They're well-researched and carefully applied. Mm. And you can put those payment card industry standards into a statute, which I think there have been some attempts to do here, although they're not complete. The problem with that, besides opening up retailers and others to new liabilities based on the same behaviors that are already mandated, is that PCI standards change and are flexible somewhat in order to meet the needs of new technology, and also in order to foil the most recent innovations of any data hackers and people out looking for consumer private information. So as the PCI standards evolve in response to those competencies, those evolving competencies, if you have them in a statute as they're written right now, and they evolve away from that, you will end up with merchants, retailers, and others having to follow essentially two sets of standards. One of those sets of standards will be outdated because it's what is in place today, and the other set of standards will be updated and probably much more protective based on what PCI changes. So again, we are very appreciative of the work that's been done on the Dash 2s. We would like to continue working on the bill to some extent and also take some more time as we go through the interim to put other pieces in place that people are concerned about.
All right, thank you. Questions for Betsy? All right, just for the record, this work group, when we start meeting, the goal of the work group is to take care of, let's call it more the low-hanging fruit stuff that everyone could pretty well agree to for the most part, and not guarantee that everyone will be at the table with a kumbaya. But at the same time, the commitment is to continue our work into the interim to start looking at some of the more heavy lifting and issues that we want to deal with. Just for reference, this is really updating what we were able to do back in 2007 when we had the Consumer Protection Theft Act put in place. That's what Betsy has referred to, that we did have a longer period through the interim to actually have people come through, and as some of us remember, we had a facilitator and we had four different levels, and the one I've always enjoyed is over my dead body.
That wasn't
which
me.
Even those individuals who are now retired, actually we got them beyond being over their dead body. So I think we have success once again. And any other comments? Betsy, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. So at this point, we have one other individual that is going to be testifying on phone while we're getting Mr. Halpert on the phone. Is there anyone else here today that wanted to testify that did not get onto the witness list? All right.
Hello.
Good morning, Mr. Halpert. This is Floyd Przanski, and here in the Judiciary Committee. I'm hoping that you've been able to follow our testimony so far.
I have not, but I am prepared to dial in to join right now.
All right. So thank you very much. We have heard from numerous individuals, and we did want to get your testimony. Thank you very much for being available by phone. And I'm going to go ahead and take the microphone and put it across the teleconference speaker here, and when you're ready, please give us your name and your testimony.
Sure. My name is Jim Halpert, and I head the cybersecurity and privacy practice at DLA Piper. I've helped clients through more than 370 data breaches and in designing dozens of cybersecurity programs. In my practice, I've helped to draft almost all the state data security and data breach notice laws, including the current Oregon law. And in looking at this bill, I know that it's very well intentioned, but I think that it's approaching the cybersecurity issue in Oregon in a way that differs needlessly from approaches in other states and would create some fundamental diversion from the important task of informing consumers of data breaches that pose risk to them and of securing personal data. First of all, the bill's drafted in a way that requires breach notice by not only the entity that has the direct relationship with the Oregon resident, whom the Oregon resident would pay attention to a notice from, but also to a long list of service providers that possess or have access to the personal data. All of these entities are supposed to provide notice to the Attorney General, to the Oregon resident, and to the merchant bank of a data breach, even for breaches that have nothing to do with payment card data. This would be confusing to the to consumers. It would also divert resources in a cybersecurity incident.
Yes. Just one thing. I know that you're giving testimony. Unfortunately, the testimony that you're giving is on a earlier draft. We're now on the dash two, so even though we're going to take the testimony, I want to make certain everyone understands that much of what you're saying has been addressed in the dash twos, and we'll continue to work on the
In the dash two, there still are extensive references to persons who possess or have access to data. That has not been fixed. I just received the dash two, but did take a look at it. And we filed repeated specific red lines and comments on why this language would create notification obligations on multiple entities. And it would be a great service if that clause were removed from the bill. In addition, the bill would leave financial institutions and healthcare providers whose security practices are heavily regulated under federal law guessing as to whether or not, and who have breach notice obligations, guessing as to whether or not they're subject to security breach notice. Furthermore, the definitions of personal information, unlike in every other state, are open-ended and don't provide clarity as to when notice is required. Given the risks of failing to notify and the importance of notifying Oregon residents where there is a risk of breach of security, every other state has clearly delineated when notice is required and when it's not, or what data elements can trigger notice obligations and which ones do not. We urge that this bill be amended to do that. In addition, the bill would codify into Oregon law parts of the mandatory PCI data security standards that every merchant that handles payment card data is contractually required to follow. This doesn't make sense, both because PCI DSS standards evolve over time and do not stay in one place, and because PCI DSS is specific to payment card data. In the end of the day, the range of data that needs to be secured ought to be subject to a generally applicable security standard, not specifically PCI DSS, because that fits only one type of data. In reality, social security numbers, driver's license numbers, and a bunch of other data elements in Oregon law are more sensitive, pose much greater risk to consumers, and viewing cybersecurity and data security from the lens, through the sole lens of PCI DSS, is, with all due respect, somewhat myopic, and it would be much better to adopt a technology-neutral approach that's based on security standards. I'd also add that Oregon law currently is one of the most comprehensive already on data security, and that several of the revisions that have been added to the bill are confusing or don't meet best practices in other areas. This is very much like the breach notice changes that the bill would make to current law. It would focus really from the perspective of payment card data and freeze into Oregon law also types of sensitive data and a notification system that really isn't designed for those types of data. In the end, this would divert resources away from the real and very difficult task of keeping up with changing cybersecurity threats because of the significant risk under the bill. Cybersecurity is not a compliance exercise, which this bill would very much make it. It is a risk management exercise. It's much better to focus on providing clarity as to what businesses need to do and to embrace existing security standards rather than making up sui generis one in Oregon law that exists nowhere else in the United States. The same thing goes for notification obligations with regard to personal data. Security, again, requires flexibility. It requires an outcomes-based approach, but it should not be something that is a very complex landmine of compliance requirements. And unfortunately, the bill as currently drafted would create those sorts of difficulties. We'd be delighted to work with you to align this bill with other state laws on data breach and data security, and very much hope that the bill will evolve further to do that. Thank you.
All right, thank you. So at this point, any questions for Mr. Halpert? Mr. Halpert, doesn't look like there's any questions. Thank you very much for your testimony, and as the chair, I appreciate your input. I'd also would appreciate you providing us, after you have a chance to go through the dash twos, more detailed response in writing so we can take that in consideration. And because of the timing, we'd like to have that as soon as possible. Monday this next week would be appreciative, since we would want to be able to consider those in future drafts.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. We've provided one set of detailed red lines, and we'll endeavor to do to update those to the new draft and send them to you with very specific word and line changes, with comments explaining the need for each one. And we would very much appreciate your reviewing those carefully. We'd be happy to discuss them with you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Have a wonderful day.
You too. Bye.
Bye. And it looks like we have one other individual that's going to be on the phone, and it's Paul Martino.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so let's see. Yeah.
Chair, I didn't see a red line from Mr. Halpert in Ola's, even though he referred to sending it in.
Yeah, I haven't seen it either.
I'll look so. For it.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Martino, this is Floyd Przonski, State Senator in Oregon. We're in the Judiciary Committee. I understand that you have been asked to give testimony today on Senate Bill 1551. And so, Mr. Martino, I'd like for you to do that at this point. If you'll give us first your name and then your testimony, we'll go from there with any Q&A.
Sure, happy to provide some testimony today. My name is Paul Martino. I'm Vice President, Senior Policy Counsel with the National Retail Federation, and I've been involved in data breach, data security issues for quite some time, principally at the federal level, but I have been called from time to time to testify at the state level with respect to data breach laws generally, and in particular with respect to state laws and how they might be consistent or inconsistent with breach notification regimes across the country.
All right, thank you. And go ahead and give us your testimony.
Okay, I appreciate that opportunity. We filed a letter with the committee yesterday, largely outlining what we saw from a review of the, well, I guess it's called the Dash 1 version of the bill. What struck us were some of the inconsistencies, and I would associate our comments here today in support of you know, Betsy Earle's testimony previously. We see a number of things that are not what we typically see in other state laws. In particular, I would call your attention to Section 2. The way Section 2 could be read, it's very unclear who makes the notice. I think it could be read that if an entity such as a retailer were to receive a notice from someone else that there was a breach somewhere causing fraud to occur on cards, that entity, if it merely had a transaction with the customer who's been affected by that fraud, would have to make notice to them. This is not how breach notification works anywhere else in the country, and it's certainly not been part of the proposals at the federal level either. What has typically been the case is that the laws talk about breaches on a system of a data owner, and the data owner has the obligation to make notice of that breach. The testimony I saw previously from the Department of Justice with respect to Gramm-Leach-Bliley, I'm assuming that they are referring to guidelines on breach notification that were issued in 2005, subsequent to the passage of Gramm-Leach-Bliley in 1999. The statute itself does not have any breach notification requirements in it. The guidelines do say that if a financial institution suffers a breach, it should make notice. They are discretionary guidelines. In practice, they may be viewed perhaps as mandatory, but they are not the same as a statute that would say that you must make notice in all situations. So the focus of this bill that we see on credit card breaches is also a bit misguided in the sense that less than 5% of all breaches at this point are the type of card breaches that are being discussed. Equifax was not that kind of card breach. Uber was not that kind of card breach. The other kinds of breaches you're seeing in the media lately have not been credit card breaches. We think that part of the reason for that is that retailers have invested millions of dollars to encrypt transactional data now, so from the moment you swipe your card to the moment it is received in the store, received at the processor, it is encrypted. But where we are seeing a lot of breaches, and what the sources have shown, is that about a quarter of all breaches are in financial institutions, financial services industry. Equifax is in financial services industry and subject to parts of the Gramm-Leach-Bliley law. We have urged that maybe the committee consider the principle that two principles. One, that a breach law should apply to everyone that suffers data breaches, and that principally the party that is the responsible party or its system had the breach should be the one principally responsible for notifying consumers of that breach. What we're concerned about in this bill, at least what we've seen so far in Section 2, is that you don't have to be the entity that had the breach the entity that had the breach isn't necessarily required to be the one that makes notice of the breach. We think that's a significant flaw and should be reconsidered. We appreciate the opportunity to work with you to discuss perhaps a comprehensive system that leaves no holes in notification, that focuses on where the state of breach law is today, that all entities that suffer breaches of sensitive personal information will be covered, that it will be a consistent notification regime, and responsibility for notifying consumers should lie with the entity that discovered the breach on their own system and has the obligation to notify consumers.
All right. Thank you for your testimony. Let me see if there's any questions from Mr. Martino. Not seeing any. Mr. Martino, thank you very much for taking some time out of your day. I know it's afternoon back in D.C. area, so I hope you have a wonderful afternoon and a great weekend.
Thank you. Happy to help. And if you would like for me to have further conversations with you or with the working group, I'd be happy to do so at your discretion.
And we would, what I would just say is I assume that you know the Dash 2s, and I'm not sure if all of your comments were focused on the Dash 1s or the Dash 2s. So if you have not had a chance to go through the Dash 2s and have other comments, please provide them to us. The hope would be to have your comments back by Monday of this next week so we could review them and potentially incorporate some of those suggestions.
All right. Well, thank you for the opportunity. No, we have not spent time focused on the Dash 2s. I have participated here to really give you the background to the letter that we provided and the reasons for the comments in that letter, which take a more principled approach. Happy to work with the Oregon Retail Council, who I think is playing a day-to-day role here, and provide any thoughts back to them that we have on Dash 2s.
All right, thank you very much. And just for the record, the letter that Mr. Martino is referring to is a February 8th letter. It should be up on OLIS, and we received it, of course, yesterday. So again, thank you very much. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Bye. All right, that concludes at least the individuals that had signed up to give testimony. I'll ask one last time, since we do have a little bit of time. Is there anyone else who wanted to make any comments on the record regarding the Dash 2s? Not seeing any, we're going to go ahead and close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1551. And at this point, we are, I think, completed for the day and for the week. We do not meet on Monday, so our next meeting will be Tuesday, and I believe it's set for 8:15. And so everyone, please enjoy your weekend, and we will see you back here in committee on Tuesday. We're adjourned.